Thank you. Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And what's a paradigm shifter? Well, things are changing on the planet. We're hoping for massive evolution of our species. What do you think about that? And paradigm shifters are people who are making a difference on the planet, making a difference, sending waves of change through the species, through the collective mind at this time. And today I have a most delighted as well, paradigm shifter with me who's he's kind of the Prius of L.A., is that right? No, it says here you're a true hybrid, so I thought you were the Prius of L.A.
Hey, Prius works. I like Prius.
a hybrid meaning he's an actor, designer, community activist, and passionate alternative health investigator or advocate. And the other thing, when I went through all your stuff, Peter Bedard is your near-death experiencer, which is something we want to talk about as well. So welcome to the show, and thank you for coming in with us today, Peter Bedard.
Well, thank you, and I had such a good time listening to your previous show.
Oh, you did? You heard it? Oh, good.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to tune in, you know, when I could in between, you know, all my other schedules, so... Yeah, it was great. I'm gonna have to call in one of these days.
Well, you know what? The callers really are a lot of fun, aren't they? And they really make the show a lot.
Maybe I'll change my name and I'll be like Giuseppe or something.
I'll say, I know who you are, hiding behind that identity, that suspense.
Exactly.
Well, here's
I mean, I have my own list.
of defenses, okay?
Yeah.
Well, we won't get into them this time because we want your amazing talents. But you know something that's funny is you're a near-death experiencer, and I want you to talk about that. But when I was online checking out your stuff, and I was I looked under Bedard, and there's a fellow who's French-Canadian, and his name is Gilles Bedard, and he's a near-death experiencer, and he uses music as a healing tool. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. I had no idea. He's probably a relative. My grandfather was very prolific.
Well, what I thought was interesting is that the names very often, well, you know, numerologists, they go through the names and find out what's going on with it and so on. And I went, well, there's a really nice overlap there. So we'll have to look into him one other day.
Yeah, I'm writing his name down, Gilles.
G-I-L-L-E-S.
Right, I got it.
Anyway, so I wasn't planning to start with that, but let's do it anyway since I've already talked about it. Near-death experience, what on earth happened? Tell us about yourself, life. And
Well, there's actually been several, and they're not truly near-death experience. Near-death experience is actually, from what I've learned, a clinical term in which you actually die and you're diagnosed as being dead. So it's when they have you on the operating table and your heart stops beating and you come back 10 minutes later, that type of thing.
Oh, okay. So it's not just like when we fall in love and your heart stops beating.
Yeah, it's just not as pleasurable. I call mine close-to-death experiences because of that, because I never was clinically diagnosed as dying.
Okay.
But I did all that stuff. I had the experience of going to the other side and talking to people on the other side and seeing a white light and going through all of those things. And mine were several different things. I've had to heal myself of lots of different traumas.
Well, wait a second. How old were you when you did your first close-to-death experience?
Well, the first one, I'm not sure if it was one because I have very vague memories of it. I was a month old. I actually remember I have memories before being born.
Okay,
which are
good.
Very interesting. But that was a month old. I went for an emergency surgery. I had pyloric stenosis, and I was, you know, baptized in the hallway of the hospital and all that kind of stuff.
Oh wow!
But the first one that I consciously really look at is. When I was 17, I was in an accident. I slammed in the back of a semi, basically.
Oh, wow.
Shattered my knee, cracked 5 vertebrae, split my wrist in half, had to learn how to walk again, the whole 9 yards. And at the time, I was hiding for so much of my, adolescence, and my world was very small, and the only thing, I was very controlled by my family. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I had that gave me any kind of semblance of peace or ability to communicate with the world was dance. And I was a dancer. I was on scholarship at a studio. And when that was taken away from me, slamming into the back of a semi and having my knee shatter, I didn't want to be on this planet anymore.
Hmm.
And I...
Why were you hiding as a young person?
It was my gender, my sexuality, my what I was being told was right, wrong, all of that kind of stuff, and how I was learning the world to be and how I was told the world was to be.
Okay, so slamming in the back of a semi saying, okay, this facade is done.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely, you know, and the only thing that I had to express myself in the world was done.
Hmm.
You know, the voice that I did have was taken away from me because I couldn't speak verbally my truth, but I could dance my truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that was gone. And I remember being out of my body and looking at my body and seeing myself in the middle of the street, you know, all mangled up and my bike being several feet away. And it was late at night. And I didn't want to get back in it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to get back in it at all. And for about a six-month period after that, I barely remember the year after that,
mm-hmm.
but for many months after that, I have very little memory mm-hmm. Of even being on this planet and in my body because I was constantly trying to leave. And I would have these long conversations with people that I learned later were my spirit guides. And they kept telling me, it was very interesting. It was like a crying baby and coming to the crying baby and letting the baby know it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically the experience.
Did they ever give you a lecture or tell you information that helped you cope with it?
They never gave me any kind of, not that I recall. I mean, they might have. The basic thing was they just listened while I ranted about how much I didn't want to be there and all the reasons why I didn't want to be there and all the reasons why I didn't deserve to be on the planet anymore.
Hmm.
And they just sort of patted me in a way and sort of like you would stroke the baby. They sort of stroked the baby and said, it's okay, you're going to be fine. You're not done yet. There's things you have to do and you need to give. And then you can go.
Oh, my.
They told me I could go, so that was nice, but not until then.
Not until you've re-inhabited your body. How long was the process of rehabilitation?
Well, it took me about a year to learn how to walk again.
Oh, my.
But I had a cast on one arm and a cast on the opposite leg, and I had weird crutches because I shattered my wrist, so I couldn't put pressure on my wrist. So I had a crutch that was, like, horizontal to the ground with a post coming out of the elbow area, so I would walk with that, and it was just a very long process, but that entire time I was out of it, unless I had to be somewhere for like a rehab session or I had to do something, I was just lying there waiting to die.
Oh, wow. And who hung around you? Who stuck with you?
Like spirit-wise?
No,
or
either,
family?
Either or.
Well, you know, my family, I was 17, I was still living at home, so I had my mom and my dad there. My brother and sister were sort of out at the house at that time. They were older than me. But I was also fiercely independent. I didn't want anybody's help. So I learned how to hop on one leg, and, you know, I was a dancer previously, so I had great balance. And so I just learned how to do everything I could as fast as I could all on my own. I started writing with my left hand, since my right hand was shattered, you know, all of those kind of things.
Wow.
But the spirits, I have a Chinese guide.
Great.
That was there. I have Confucius. I have this wonderful old Chinese energy that is with me all the time.
And have you been working with him the whole time?
Mm-hmm.
So when you were little, did you know you wanted to be an actor? I mean, is there kind of a segue past the accident?
Absolutely. Well, I had started acting when I was, I think, 9.
Okay.
So I saw a cousin in a play, and I said, that's what I want to do. And to my parents' chagrin. I don't know if my parents had even actually, if I remember correctly, my parents had never even gone to a play until a cousin of mine was in a show at Stanford University, and we went to see his show, and I saw that show. It was How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying.
Hmm.
And I just fell in love. Right then and there, and that was what I wanted to do.
And so you knew that as a kid. So you had your first near-death or close encounter. Ooh. But it says here you had 5 of those, did you?
I did, yeah. I've had a couple of weird blood disorders. I had a situation where my hemoglobin was splitting, mm-hmm. and when it does, your body becomes toxic, and it was literally shutting down. I've had several, like, I have about 5 severe dehydration instances where, like, if I wouldn't have had fluids pumped into me in a half hour or so, I would have expired.
And did you have huge consciousness shifts during those periods again? Like, did you go through the tunnel more than once, and did mm-hmm. you have more spirit guide revelations?
You know, and that's the thing. I feel cheated. None of them. I've not had that revelation. It's just like they're waiting for me now again. Like, they're at the end going, nope, can't go yet. I would love to have those revelations. But basically, I just show up. It's like going to a train station without a ticket. And I show up at the train station. I'm like, okay, I'm ready now. And they're like, yeah, no, sorry. Train's not ready yet.
So why do you think you're having all these?
I think there's lots of different things that I've had to get rid of. I'm a big believer in past lives. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of karma that I was just getting rid of. And mm-hmm. there's a lot of, you know, I used to be the person that would look in the mirror mm-hmm. and see a monster.
Oh, really?
I had such bad self-esteem and low self-worth. That I didn't want to be here anymore. And that, again, goes back to, you know, what I brought up earlier, is it was my sexuality.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's just that, because there are so many people that I would call paradigm shifters, or people who are meant to be a part of this big change right now. Mm-hmm. And so many of us would say when we were younger, I just don't want to be here. And I still hear that amongst people, but it's a really... like I was born as an alien in this culture. I don't belong. So whether it's our sexuality or whether it's the way we see things or whatever, mm-hmm. it seems to be necessary to be alienated from that, which might conscript our thinking so thoroughly we wouldn't even think of being paradigm shifters, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the, you know, what I learned later was, you know, not to build myself up, but to say that's the hero's journey.
Right on. You know, I love it.
Absolutely. You know, the idea that you're born into some place where you don't fit, and you're thrown out of the village, and then you have to go slay the dragon, and you learn something that allows you to come back. And that's really kind of how I feel right now, where I'm like, okay, you know, I can check out any minute now. I'd be okay with that, but I'm now here doing something, and I feel like I have a purpose.
Well, it seems to me also, with all those close encounters, that you were thrown out of the third dimension and back in, out of the third dimension and back in, you must know you're supposed to be here, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Most people don't get that quite clear message, which is rather uncomfortable to boot, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't very fun, but yes, it's very clear.
So what did you do? Did you go to college? When did you do hypnotherapy? What?
Well, just a few years ago, about 5 years ago, six and a half years ago, almost 7 years ago, I decided I wanted to go back and get a degree. And I did not enjoy college. College was that thing I did because I couldn't be a dancer anymore.
Okay.
It was that thing I did as responsibility to my parents, because I couldn't be an artist, because artists can't take care of themselves, was the message that I was taught, mm-hmm. and you always had to have that regular job to fall back on.
Right.
So I went to college for that purpose, to have something to fall back on, because God forbid you be successful at what you love. Right.
It's a paradigm, right?
Exactly, right?
Yeah, you bet.
Uh-huh. So I went to college and didn't like a lick of it. And as an adult, I was looking at a bunch of classes, and I'm like, oh, I love this class. I love that class. That would be really cool. And I found out that they were part of a program. And I literally said, I'm going to go back to school, and I'm going to do it differently. And I'm going to do it my way. And so I went back to school in my mid-30s. And I decided to get a master's degree. And then while I was in my 2-year master's program, I discovered a year-long training program in hypnosis.
And wait a second. What was your master's in?
Oh, my master's was in consciousness studies.
Uh-huh.
Fascinating field. Who said science and religion can't get along? It's awesome.
Which college did you go to, Peter?
I went to a private school called the Philosophical Research Society.
Oh, wow.
And they, Madame Blatsky, you know who
right.
Madame Blatsky was? Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, it was helped. It was partially founded by her, and it's in L.A. And it was pretty phenomenal. There, the school
that's
is
a
one
pretty
of the,
intense. That's a pretty intense system, isn't it?
It was really intense. And did you remember the film What the Bleep?
You bet.
Okay. My education was summed up in that film. So the classes I took, which were really about consciousness and then the science behind that and why, you know, what they're discovering with quantum science and things of that sort, why religion is, or the beliefs that we have in not dogmatic, of course, but in spirituality, are actually scientifically valid. And so my degree was, you know, the theory of quantum science and combining that with theology, basically.
Did you love those classes?
It was in heaven. I loved it, loved it, loved it. I could just take those classes forever.
Wow.
I so, could, yeah.
So then you go into hypnotherapy. So what are you going to do with hypnotherapy by this time?
Well, I am a pretty great hypnotherapist.
So what's so great about hypnotherapy? What can you tell us about it? Of course, we all know a little bit about it. So,
well, you know, I like to demystify hypnotherapy and hypnosis. A lot of people have an idea that it's this, you know, woo-woo type of thing or something like that. And, it, you know, if you've ever driven your car from one place to another and not remembered the drive, you've been in hypnosis.
Right.
If you've ever read that book and, you know, 2 hours later looked up and seen that time has passed by and you didn't even realize it, you've been in hypnosis. It's hypnosis, and the state of hypnosis is almost the same thing as visualization, as meditation, as imagery, as the work that you did earlier with the, I forget what you call it.
The sacred geometrics.
The sacred geometrics. You can, I imagine people often, if they take the time to really do it, will probably slip into a hypnotic state while they are doing that meditation.
Right. I do.
And it, yeah, exactly. And so it's just learning to use a natural way of being, something that our brains and our consciousness work together to create, and using that to help people move on in their lives.
So so I want to jump around a little bit, because if it says, you say here that you're really curious about all kinds of alternative health, and I love hypnotherapy because you can actually go diving into levels of our thinking, can't we? But what impact is that having on your acting?
Well, funny that you bring that up, because I am actually creating a whole series of CDs that are focused on actor issues. So they're like letting actors work on stage fright, or, you know, even like public speaking type of things. Believe it or not, a lot of actors actually have stage fright and get nervous, you know, before they go on. Anxiety release, stress release, all of those kind of issues that are heightened because of the profession. So one of the things we're creating is just ways to focus those talents that you have, the natural ability to visualize, imagine, think about, and use a hypnotic state to move past those detriments.
How about making quantum leaps in the world? Becoming multidimensional.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there's no reason why you can't do that. Anytime that you can allow your mind to do its job and to start spinning and understanding, our brains are addictive. Anytime you can get your brain to just let it and release it to do that thing and allow your consciousness to actually observe, you're going to be able to jump into those levels.
So what is consciousness?
I love that question, because my answer always changes.
Oh,
for
good.
Me, right now, consciousness really has to do recognizing that we are living a creative life, and that we are here to create, being conscious of that. There's a wonderful quote by the woman who wrote The Artist's Way, and she says, I forget her name right now, but she says,
Julia Cameron,
the best way, or the most, I'm plagiarizing, but the most amazing gift you can give to your creator is to be creative. And to recognize that we are in a world with creative potential, and we are here to use that potential and to use all of the creative resources we have to create the world, the environment, the space, the place that we want. And that brings me back to my degree. You know, my degree is in quantum science and theology, and quantum theory tells us flat out that, you know, what you expect to happen is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's the power of your thoughts.
Okay, so what I want to say is that when you want to get an acting job,
mm-hmm.
how efficient are you about, you know what I mean? Like, how are you at manifesting? Let's get down to the brass tacks here.
Well, I am really good at manifesting. I think we all are. It's just about manifesting what you want. One of the things, I dropped out of acting for about 8 years, and I've only been back for a few years. I've had some really wonderful successes. I did 8 films last year.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, this year's been very slow. And I am looking at what's coming up for me is I'm looking at the beliefs that I'm holding behind that are blocking me from manifesting because of what I want, because I'm manifesting. In 3 years, I've come from nowhere to having everything that I have and the credits that I have, from being a nobody to now somebody that's actually, you know, you kind of, in the industry here in L.A., people are kind of like, oh, I know that name. Why do I know that name?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not at the end point. I'm not where I want to be just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm using those manifesting skills to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I have discovered that I still, even at with all the work I've done, have some beliefs about abundance and have some beliefs about worthiness that get in my way.
Okay, so how do you deal with those? Do you use the hypnotherapy?
Recognize them.
Okay.
The biggest thing that I do is just become conscious of them, because I'm a big believer that when you can become conscious of what it is that is limiting you, it's a smoke and mirrors game. And when you look at, it's like looking at fear. When you look the fear right in the eye, you suddenly discover that there's nothing there.
Hmm.
There's nothing to be afraid of. And that's a process I'm doing. It's like, okay, where does this come from? Where
you, don't,
does that come?
You don't need to use hypnotherapy on that.
Oh, I do, absolutely. Yeah, I do. So, but I do a bunch of self-hypnosis work.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Can you
it's
teach,
so easy.
Can you teach our wonderful listeners something?
Sure, sure. One
some
of the best of things to do. There's,
mm-hmm.
I do 3 stages. So I teach, one of my big beliefs in therapy of any kind is that it should be relatively quick and easy. Now, the process that you're going through doesn't necessarily, you know, sometimes it can be convoluted or whatever, but the process of therapy is really the process of recognizing and taking action.
Hmm.
So recognizing what it is that is limiting you, and I don't agree with most modern day, not all, I mean, Jungian therapists I'm more in alignment with, but a lot of psychotherapists that believe you need to know the reason why you feel the way you do or why your behavior is the way it is. The beautiful thing about hypnosis is you can just create a new behavior.
Hmm.
So there's a 3-part process that I go through, and I teach everybody because I want them to learn it,
okay.
and to be able to do it all on their own without me. Because I don't need you to buy me a Mercedes.
Darn.
So right. Well, if you want to, I'm open to it. You know, that's certainly. But what I'm saying is, I don't believe in that process. I've been. You know, you hear people say things. I've been in, you know, therapy for 15 years, or 10 years, or 7 years, and you know,
they're usually from the East Coast, aren't they?
A lot of that is what's very prevalent on the East Coast, especially in New York. And I am very much against that, because if you're in therapy that long, you're wasting your time and your energy, and you need to try something else, mm-hmm. and try a different kind of therapy. Because that kind of release isn't working for you, and I'm big into the subconscious. So the first step I do is ask people to do what we call the eye fascination. And it's just like what you see in the movies, and it's oftentimes used in a lot of Buddhist meditation. It's where you focus on an object, and that object in the film industry is often the watch. You know, you see the watch going back and forth and back and forth. And you can do that, but there's a quicker way to invite the brain to go from bring our focus from the outside to the inside, and that way is to actually allow yourself either to sit or lie down, put your chin at a comfortable level, but allow your eyes to look up through your eyebrows as if they're looking through your crown chakra,
okay.
looking through your forehead, looking whether it's at the ceiling, at a point that it's difficult for the eyes to focus on. So you're actually stretching and straining the eyes a little bit.
Mm.
And this sends a signal to the brain. We don't know why, but it's a biomechanical sort of response It sends a signal to the brain for the eyes to fatigue and close, and then to go within and bring your attention in. And you could just close your eyes, but it doesn't engage as well. So if you can sit there, allow your vision to look through your eyebrows, to have your eyes focus on that spot, allow them, invite them to get heavier and heavier, to blink, to close. There's a few little responses that you'll notice as you go into that state that will tell you, oop, we're going and it's happening. You might get a little dry mouth. Your lips might be dry. You might have the need to swallow. Your eyes may flutter and blink. They may unfocus. All of those are just little biological symptoms or signals telling us that you're actually going to that deeper place and that quiet place. So allow yourself to go to that first step. The second step is simply to bring your consciousness, bring your awareness into your body. Because the body processes all of our feelings and emotions for us. When we're happy, we feel it in our body. When we're sad, we feel it in our body. So let's start with the body and bring your focus and attention into the body. And I actually bring people's attention and consciousness into the feet. And I ask them to visualize, imagine, or think about bringing all of your attention into your feet as if you were seeing the world, experiencing the world, being around the world and in the world through your feet. And invite your feet to become still and pay attention to all those little muscles and bones that are in your feet that allow you to go through life, that allow you to move, and to pay attention to all those little parts. And invite all those parts to become still. And as you're conscious and you're aware and you're seeing the world and you're in the world where your feet are, down on the ground, connected to the earth, just invite that stillness and invite that stillness to come into your feet and allow it to move up from the ground, from the earth, into your ankles and then into your legs. And let that stillness invite it. Pay attention. The most powerful gift you can give to yourself is attention. So pay attention now to your legs and to those long muscles in your calves, your hamstrings, your quadriceps. Pay attention to your knees and your shins. Just be aware of those parts of you and invite all those parts to let go and become still. Invite them to release. And have appreciation for them, for they too, like your feet, bring you to amazing, wonderful places. And if you notice anything in there, just like your body processes, helps us express and process our feelings and emotions, if there's any feeling or emotion in your feet or your legs that you need to release, invite it to go. Invite it to just let go. And then let that space be there. Let that space just fill up. And open, and let that space expand as things just fall away. Just visualize, imagine, and think about if something is there, what would be there, what might be held there, and invite that to just release as you pay attention to it and bring your consciousness as you're creating again. Right now in this moment, you are creating space, and you're creating awareness. And the most wonderful thing is you're starting to create a relationship again with your body. So many of us ignore our bodies, you know?
That's
right. Our bodies are so there for us. So to pay attention to them. And then I ask that the energy moves into the hips and the groin and the stomach and the abdominals. And to pay attention to those parts and invite that stillness to move up into those parts of the body. And to notice, is there something in that part of the body that needs to be released? You know, pay attention to your intestines. How often do you ever pay attention to your intestines? Well, don't they do a lot of work for you? Right? I mean, they help us, you know. If your intestines are having a hard time, your entire body is unhappy. And your head's unhappy, too, because you're not feeling good.
That's right.
But pay attention. Build that relationship. Listen to that part of you. And just notice if they're smooth or if they're rough and invite them to be smooth. Invite them to be still. And as you listen to those parts of you, invite that stillness to come in on an even deeper level. And notice again if there's anything that you're holding in that part of your body. If there's anything at all that, you know, maybe is inhabited there from somebody else even. It could be a pain that you had when you were 13 years old and somebody said something to you that for some reason you put in and it felt like a pit in your stomach. Well, recognize that pit and let it go. Just let it fall off or dissolve, or you could even reach in there and throw it away and give that energy that's there back to the universe to be turned into something good and positive instead of something stuck inside you. And just continue to release it as you bring that stillness up into your chest, into your lungs, into those little muscles in your ribs. How fantastic is it that our ribs expand and contract and effortlessly bring oxygen into our body?
Wow.
Isn't that an amazing thing?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a huge gift. So pay attention to those little muscles. I mean, if you ever had one bruised or hurt, oof, you know how important that muscle is.
Right.
So pay attention to it. Listen to it. And allow that bruise to just heal and go away. Allow your body to come to that natural state of health that is there for all of us. So recognize it and let it be created in you on the physical level. Move that stillness into your heart. And I like to talk about the rooms of the heart. You know, we talk about there's chambers of the heart and valves, and that the chambers of the heart are actually rooms. You know, and there's doors to different levels, and the energy moves from one room to another room to another room as it pumps through our heart, and the oxygen gives the gift of oxygen. Our lungs give the gift of oxygen to our blood, which then replenishes into our system, and our heart delivers that blood to our whole body. It's like delivering abundance. Literally is. Every time you take a breath and every time your heart beats, you're delivering abundance to your entire body.
Mm-hmm.
The abundance of oxygen, the abundance of energy that's powering all of our tissues and organs. And that's one thing I learned with my close-to-death experiences, is that, you know, we really are abundant beings. And do you accept that? So ask yourself now, do I accept the abundance that is being given to me?
And that probably prevents manifestation when we don't.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, and then I just ask that stillness, if you can give permission for it to move across your arms, your hands and fingers, your shoulders. You know, what are you holding on to with your hands? Are you gripping? Pay attention. And if there's anything you're holding on to, anyone, that's a big one, anyone you're holding on to, let them go. Just release them. Let them go. Let go of the pain that you think they caused you, or let go of the anxiety that you're holding on to because you're afraid to take that leap or that next step. Just let it go. And when you let go of something, you know, the magical thing is your hands open. When your hands open, you can actually receive. And receiving is a huge, huge thing.
Right.
You know, coming from somebody like me who had, you know, minimal self-worth, if any, receiving, oh, my hands were always closed. You know, now, hey, bring it on. And let that energy just come right in your hands, and then move that stillness and that energy up into your head. And pay attention to all those little muscles in your face. Those are really cool because they let the world know how you're feeling. You know? They're so communicative, all those muscles around your eyes, your nose, your ears, your mouth. Let that stillness, that energy just move into you. And by now, people normally feel a sense of, like, grounded centeredness, a sense of stillness. Some may even feel either a sense of lightness,
mm-hmm.
or some may feel a sense of deep, relaxed heaviness. Like their hands are just so heavy, they're just like lead bricks laying along their side, and that either way, whatever you go to, the lightness of a cloud or the heaviness of a brick, they're beautiful things because either way, they're letting the body actually be in a state of calm stillness.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go into that state of stillness, you give permission to heal.
Aha, that was the question I was going to ask you. This does lead to a lot of healing potential, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Huge, 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 huge. And
have
when you get to this
it?
State,
Have you had to use it on your own little broken body?
Oh, absolutely. And I discovered that, you know, before I even got in hypnosis, the hypnosis was something that was just a natural fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to start using it because I truly believe that you are never going to get better until you take responsibility for your illness. It doesn't matter if somebody poisoned you or if, you know, somebody else so-and-so, quote-unquote, caused your illness. You need to forget about them and take responsibility for exactly where you are.
So how did you do that?
I did that through visualizing, saying, okay, somebody ran me off the road and I slammed into the back of a semi. Well, I put myself in that place to be slammed into the back of a semi. So I'm going to take responsibility for my body and for my pain and for my broken bones.
But that must have taken a little time if you were lolling around wondering whether to stay or leave.
Oh, it took years. Even after I was healed, even after my bones knitted and healed,
mm-hmm.
it took a good 15 years for me to actually go, oh, I get it. Because I didn't know there were other options to me. I only knew I could go to surgery or take drugs. And when I discovered alternative health and other things that I could do, alternative medicine and therapies, indigenous therapies, suddenly I was able to heal.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a huge thing when to learn that no one is ever healing you. You are healing in partnership.
Mm-hmm.
No one can wave a magic wand over you and say that you're better, because if you do get better, all you're going to do is recreate the problem.
Right. Well, I want to go back to something else you're saying, which is that you're saying you ought to take responsibility,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you did this wonderful hypno tour. I'm going, well, you can go into the body and do some amazing healing with all that consciousness, can't you?
Yes, absolutely. You know, back in the 70s, they did this study that they called the Pac-Man study on cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally had people go into their bodies and visualize, imagine and think about little Pac-Mans.
Yeah, I remember that.
Running around. Yeah, and people mm-hmm. healed. It's
mm-hmm.
phenomenal what we can do with our bodies when we first take responsibility. Because you can't have little Pac-Mans running around you and you eating the cancer cells
mm-hmm.
if you're not taking responsibility and being in your body.
Right.
So
you
that's
think
what
that,
I mean.
Well, when you're working with, do you do a lot of hypnotherapy now?
I put it onto the side a little while, and I only did it part-time, but it's building up more and more right now. I'm seeing a lot of clients, yeah.
Well, you know, and so much of our talk in Radiance by Design anyway, or even Paradigm Shifters, is about getting to the unlimited forces in humanity, meaning
mm-hmm.
I believe that we've been limited by the nature of our species and how we started and all that. We've been purposely limited so we wouldn't be too out of control. But I believe we're coming into an unlimited time. And I'm thinking that what your work can do is take people into really unlimiting themselves, can it?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why, one of my big goals in life is to share all those different ways where you can create unlimited potential for yourself. So, yeah, that's like one of my life purposes.
I think it's a brilliant purpose. Also to get in touch with, and you talked about the sexual identity and so on, but getting in touch with who we really are as individuals, that's pretty crucial for healing as well, isn't it?
Absolutely, and you know, that's a huge gift. That is an enormous gift, getting in touch with who you are, no matter what it is that's blocking you.
Mm-hmm.
When you can move that, I tend to look at it, I'm a gay man, and that is a huge gift that was given to me because it forced me to understand who I am.
Mm-hmm.
It forced me to look at who I am, and it forced me to learn and love who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And with, because nobody else was going to do it. Nobody else wanted to do that at all.
And you had to accept, who
mm-hmm.
you are and be honest about who you are and
mm-hmm.
all the rest of it, right?
And you learn to hide, and I became extremely skilled at hiding. I became really good at avoiding and hiding. And that talent, when turned into the reverse, you know, when it goes from the dark to the light, you know,
mm-hmm.
Is really amazing because you can start recognizing in other people.
Hmm.
You feel it. Like, you literally feel it.
Hmm.
It's pretty amazing.
I mean, not just the sexual preference, but the actual ability for people to stand strong in who they are.
Oh, yeah.
Or their ability to hide.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And
how many
has nothing
people
to do
you think are hiding out of 10 or out of 100?
Oh, how many of us are hiding?
Probably 99%.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a protective thing that we do. And, you know, there's been even times where I've caught myself going, whoa, wait, what's that about? Why am I doing that, you know? Because a fear jumps in, or a fear of being judged. I think you said earlier, in your earlier broadcast, where you said something really great about fear of being liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, there's things that we do to hide in order for other people to like us. When the opposite is so true, that you cannot control whether or not anybody likes you, and when you're really authentic and present, more people will like you than ever before.
Mm-hmm. But there'll always be people who don't like us, right?
That's what I was just going to say. Absolutely, and to give them permission to not like you is so empowering.
What really hit me one day is realizing that if everybody liked me, then I'm kind of a wuss. I'm not really being myself.
Absolutely.
Because that won't work. So, so when you're working with people, you're bringing them into, I was reading something and you were saying helping people come out sexually. And I think what I'm thinking is how needed it is to help people come into their authenticity. I think it's probably the same. It's just a component of it, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't even look at it as coming out sexually. I look at it as stepping into your authenticity. So it's, you know, it's kind of interesting that you said that, because you could be the most accepted cultural norm, which would be like a straight white male, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is the most accepted cultural norm in our society.
Mm-hmm.
You could be that and still not be authentic.
Right, because you could be resting on your laurels, really.
Or you could just not know who you are. Because you've never had to ask that question.
And what do you think about Michael Jackson? I mean, I know it's sad he died and so on, but I am marveling that he probably had an awful time knowing who he really was.
I've seen a few interviews of him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very true. I think that he was probably just starting to understand who he was. And, you know, from what I understand, Michael Jackson, I've heard this over and over again for years, was a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you're addicted to any substance, you are always, and I would even say cigarettes, you are always hiding your authentic self.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's hidden his authentic self his entire life.
I was thinking it was a perfect opportunity, since he's already in the front of everybody's mind, or a lot of people's minds, to really bring that subject up on a national level. Could you do that, please?
Sure. We can manifest that, absolutely.
So
authenticity is so important. Go ahead.
I think that do they teach that at Consciousness? What is the school, again, that you went to, the university?
Well, I went to the Philosophical Research Society. They only offer 2 master's programs. And so the one I took was the Master's in Consciousness Studies.
It just sounds so wonderful. Like, I would love to do that someday, maybe in about 20 years.
Well, there's no better time than the present.
Well, I'm pretty busy right now and loving what I'm doing, and it's working a lot with authenticity and quantum stuff as well, you know. So I'm partway there.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know what you're doing. What are you doing there in L.A. right now? How can we see you? What shows are you in? What movies are you in? Have you gotten any Academy Awards yet?
Well, no Academy Awards. But I just was meeting with producers for a TV show, so we'll see where that goes. I'd rather not say the name, but
okay. We'll
see where that goes. Like I said, I did 8 films last year. It's been a very slow year this year, so one of the things that I wanted to do is coming back and being an actor is to say, how am I going to bring the desire and the passion that I have for sharing information, as well as the excitement that I have in being on a show like yours?
Mm-hmm.
And so I created my own show, and I have a show called CreateYourHealth.com.
Which is delightful.
Thank you. I'm so glad you went to watch it.
I love it. It's short. It's like 7 minutes long, right?
Yeah, well, we have 37 episodes up right now, and we have each of those episodes is about 5 minutes total each. The longest one, I think, is like 7.5 or something like that. But we try to keep them around 5 minutes, and that's with credits and everything. So they're easy to watch.
You can put them on YouTube, eh?
Yeah, you can actually watch it on the website, which is the createyourhealth.com site, or we post them on YouTube as well. So you can watch it on Yahoo, Rever, Google, YouTube, bunch of different places right now. It's growing.
Isn't media wonderful these days?
Yeah, and that was part of my challenge, is coming back into being an actor, because I didn't want to do something that that didn't have a level of enlightenment to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm a true believer that anything that makes you laugh moves you into enlightenment. So it could be a silly, crazy film, but if it makes you laugh, and it brings you to a higher level of vibration.
You know what? I'm jumping around here because there's so much I want to say, and we're coming close to the end. But have you seen the movie The Peaceful Warrior?
No, I have not. I actually saw... Oh, wait. No, that was Neil Donald Walsh's film. No, I did not see The Peaceful Warrior.
Well, you might want to, because, you know, it's about a fellow who's a partier, and he smashes his ankle in a motorcycle accident, and how he gets back. Do you know that?
I know the basic concept of it, yes.
Okay, and the reason I'm saying that is because you're in the film industry, and that movie is really amazing to watch. It really puts a lot of the message out there. The other one that cracked me up, I was on a plane, I was very exhausted, and the movie that they were showing was Bedtime Stories, and I'm going, oh, yuck. But, you know, have you seen it?
No, I have not seen that one either. I'm on Mike Strike, too.
Well, it's funny because, this is not a contest. It's just ideas, because... What this guy does is he has to tell stories to his nephew and niece.
And they come alive.
They all come true, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting there. I haven't had any sleep, and I'm absolutely mesmerized by the kind of the metaphysics or the creating your reality stuff in there. It's really good.
Absolutely, and isn't that what we do? I mean, I encourage people to do like a meditation or a trance. Shut the TV off before you go to bed. Absolutely. Shut the radio, shut the TV off before you go to bed. And tell yourself a bedtime story.
Yeah, perfect.
Seriously. You know, like, what is it that you want to manifest in your life? What is it that you want to bring about into authenticity? Tell the story of that. I do it every night.
I think that's brilliant. And what is it? The guy in What the Bleep says, I spend a few minutes every morning creating my day.
Fred Allen Wolf, I think that was.
Yeah, I don't know which one, but he's very good. So I want everybody to take a look at your website where you have your stand-up, your comedian stuff, and your... No, they can look at your reel, too, but the comedian stuff cracked me up, I have to
say.
Well,
you could Google me on, do a search for me on YouTube, and you can find all my videos. So if you want to find my stand-up, which is really fun, you could go and just put my name, Peter Bedard, B-E-D-A-R-D, put that into YouTube. Or you can go to createyourhealth.com and watch me be quirky and funny with a bunch of healers and alternative health people.
Well, what I pick up when I'm watching you is the joyfulness. You have a hoot playing these different roles, and that's so wonderful. And you just said, you know, making people laugh is a really great way to do healing, right?
Absolutely, and while you're doing that, you're creating.
Yeah.
Well,
so are you in any movies right now? No, you said you're having a bit of a slow patch, right?
I have a bit of a slow patch right now. There's a one that was just on TV called Coffee Date. So if you look up Coffee Date, I think it's on Logo right now, or it was. I'm not sure of the schedule, but there was Coffee Date that was just out.
What is Coffee Date? Is that a movie or what?
Coffee Date, yeah, it's a film. There's a short and a feature, mm-hmm. and I was in both of those.
Oh.
So you can find those. That's been doing it. There's a couple films that are doing the circuit right now. If you're at any international film festivals, it's called... Whispering Waves, and Whispering Waves is playing in the London International Film Festival, the Scottish International Film Festival, and the South African International Film Festival this summer.
Oh, wow.
So if you're around for any of those.
Great. That's a short.
Yes, that's a short film.
Short and pithy?
Very pithy. That's a fun word.
Is it funny or serious?
Whispering Waves is actually a serious film. It's a very sweet, serious film about a woman who finds her authentic self.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah, that's the basic storyline.
It's on the international film circuit.
Currently, yes.
Well, you know what? We have to sign off, but I have so enjoyed our time together, and I expect to hear from you again as you get to your next levels or you have more to create. I think you should make film.
Well, I appreciate the invitation. If there's anybody out there that wants to make movies with me, I love it.
Oh, you know, and the other thing I'm laughing at, Peter, is we're talking about reality TV all the time. Well, how about creating reality TV. How about that? How about doing a really magical TV show?
In fact, I'm writing a treatment for that right now.
Well, I want to proof it.
Well, okay.
Thank you so much for our time. You've just really been invigorating and a lot of fun, Peter, and very inspiring.
Thank you, Veronica. It's really cool to be on your show, and I love what you're creating. So thank you for putting that out to the world.
Thank you, and for what you're putting out in the world, createyourhealth.com and so much more. See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. So this is Veronica Entwistle. That was our paradigm shifter for today, but he's paradigm shifting for quite a while right now. I'm sure that he's just beginning to really send those waves out there. And consciousness, wow, so many times it gets increased because we get blasted by, as he says, by our own choices in life, and we get pulled apart and have to, be open to much greater consciousness and then pass it on. This is Veronica Entwistle saying I'm going to be on Jackie Salvitti's show. Who am I? Just wash my mouth. Can't do a thing with it. So Thursday night at 8 o'clock, I'm going to be on with Jackie Salvitti on ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness, and I'm asking questions of the team. Next week on Paradigm Shifters, I have Asha Praver, who is just a wonderful woman who started Ananda, which is a conscious spiritual community around Kriyananda, Swami Kriyananda, who used to be J. Donald Walters, and he's a protege of Yogananda. It's very wonderful to talk with her. She'll talk about healing and clearing spaces and so on. And I think we're going to continue with defensiveness next week on Radiance by Design. Again, let's all call in some light. Let's call in some love on this amazing day of so many light filled influences. Call it in, run it down through your body and out through your heart and send it out. So I hope everybody receives some love from me, from my team, my guides, and from one another. Much love, many blessings. Thank you.